The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Andrew Locher subbing in this morning for Mr. Stephen Fleury. It's a busy time of year for the college, and this is a time that we take a break after midterms and go on a little excursion. The students in Edstone, along with the faculty there, have traveled to the Lake District up in England, and they're suffering through some pretty inclement weather, as you heard from the news at the top of the hour here. Really some great pictures online if you want to look at heavy snow and wind and ice. The canals, some of them appear to be frozen. They're saying that the beast from the east is colliding now with some other kind of a snow front or weather front that's bringing just a large amount of snow. From the Telegraph just this morning, they say new red alert for snow as Storm Emma hits amid gas shortage. Some of the highlights of this article they list here is unrelenting snow brings roads, trains, and flights to a halt. They say hundreds of schools have closed amid gale force winds and blizzards. And really, I think Scotland was hit hardest just in the last day or two, but it is kind of moving to the west and down a little bit further south. They say this Storm Emma swept in from the Atlantic, and again, it's colliding with the beast from the east. The wind chills are about 20 degrees below zero Celsius, or about 5 degrees Fahrenheit. This article continues with some highlights. It says hundreds are trapped on the motorway for up to 13 hours overnight. And then the National Grid warns that the UK will not have enough gas to meet demand. And so they're really suffering through a pretty significant storm over there in England. This article starts out by saying England's first ever red or danger to life alert for snow and ice has been issued by the Met Office as people are warned to avoid all but essential travel on another day of sub-zero temperatures and blizzard-like conditions. And it's kind of funny. I think all of us have gone through some severe weather, and not to belittle this, but I think sometimes meteorologists can be drama queens. They can really make something sound so extreme. And I'm not trying to say that this isn't a bad storm, but boy, some of the things that they're saying, it just seems a little bit over the top. They said, as another day of severe weather has hundreds of drivers stranded overnight and more roads impassable and up to a foot of snow in Scotland and north in England. In a dramatic escalation of severe weather that has crippled huge swaths of Britain for these days, the National Grid warned that there might not be enough gas to meet demand on Thursday, the first day of meteorological spring. And so England continues to suffer through its own share of trials and tests with severe weather now and a shortage of supplies. And that's what the students are camping in over in England. Here in the U.S., the college students depart today for Robber's Cave. It has a lot of historical importance to the church and to the college. We're going down there. The temperatures are supposed to be about 65 degrees, really warm and pleasant. So I'm glad that we're here at the U.S. campus and not over there in England. I guess we'll have to worry about allergies maybe a little bit, but that's about the full extent of our danger. So anyway, Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back next week after his blizzard experience, and maybe he can fill in some of the details of how treacherous it really was. This morning also, I was just trying to update a few news items for my program here and came across a headline. This was in The Sun, and I think it was in several other newspapers, but from England, the headline is "The Unstoppable Bomb. Vladimir Putin boasts Russia has developed an intercontinental nuclear missile that can't be stopped or shot down by any country's defense system." And just reading through that article briefly, it talked about just the massive capability of this new missile that they've developed. It's an upgrade from the Satan missile that they have, which, as The Sun points out, is capable of wiping out the entire nation of England with just one missile. It's a huge missile. This new one is even larger, and again, they're boasting that it can't be stopped. Further down in that article, they also talked about some new underwater technologies that they have that are capable of sinking our aircraft carriers or blowing up port facilities. Those are also nuclear capable. And so you see these weapons that are being developed and proliferated around the world, it really is alarming if you don't know where it's all leading. And so anyway, there's a lot to keep your eye on in the news that way. Well, we've been talking about anniversaries quite a bit on this program. Stephen Fleury seems to daily bring us an anniversary of some significant event in the church or on the world scene. And yesterday was a big anniversary for us. It marked the one-year anniversary date from signing the contract to purchase the church's Gulfstream 450. It's hard to believe that it's been a year now since we signed the bottom line there to purchase that aircraft. And within that first year, the first year since we've owned it, at least on paper, I'll talk a little bit more about the details. But in that first year, it's had a massive impact on this work. Gerald Fleury has visited three continents, if you include North America, Britain, and then he flew down into the Middle East. During that same time, he's made five church visits away from headquarters. He's conducted two personal appearance campaigns, one in California, one in Texas. We've heard a lot about those. Last October, he visited the UK and met with members from Britain and Europe. Then he flew down into Israel and had a personal meeting with Dr. Elat Mazar, preparing for the current church-sponsored and staffed dig in the Ophel, and talked about Isaiah and a lot of other details there. Again, all of this within the first year. Within a couple weeks, he'll depart for Australia and the Philippines. We're in the final planning stages for that visit, and he'll meet with over 500 brethren down there in the Philippines and Australia. Really an active first year for the aircraft. Now, financially, as we look at the aircraft, this was quite a test for the work, just like building the auditorium or taking on some of the other large projects. And as our experience was in the past with those very expensive projects, we're really going through the same thing here by paying things off at an accelerated pace. More than 30% of the purchase price of the aircraft has been paid thus far. And if we continue on this trajectory, we'll pay off the loan balance by early 2020. And something tells me we'll probably pay it off even sooner than that. The first year of running the aircraft or operating the aircraft, we've kept the expenses down a little bit over $1 million less than we originally budgeted for. Now, those costs were going to increase as we really, if you look back at 2017 and early 2018, during that first year of owning the aircraft, only about 8 months out of the year were we really able to actively use it. And that's because it had to go through the purchase inspections, we had to go through delivery, we had to obtain required paperwork from the FAA, we had to pay use tax, and we continued to file paperwork and deal with some of the administrative details of that aircraft. We have trained pilots now on staff, which we've really enjoyed their professional service. We have a great mechanic that's keeping us ahead of schedule on maintenance and doing a lot of work at a very reasonable rate for us. And so we're quite pleased with the operational costs. We have a pretty good-sized team that helps maintain the aircraft, helps maintain the operational function, the planning, everything associated with it. So it has been a great project to take on, a very exciting project. In 2018, even just in the first 2 months, we've already been busy with the aircraft. That's when we've attended to those two campaigns that I mentioned in California and Texas. We're planning several more of those campaigns in the coming year. We've had requests from a lot of people all over the world that wonder when Gerald Fleury is coming to their city or to their country. So they have been really very successful for us, those campaigns. Now, coming up, as I said, we will be making a trans-Pacific journey to Australia and the Philippines. I read an interesting article when we were considering the purchase of the aircraft, just how risky those kind of trips can be for private aircraft, because there's a lot that goes into it. And so we have a very sophisticated crew and everything will be just fine on that. But it is really aggressive in the way that we're using this aircraft now to get all over the world. Upon returning from Australia a few weeks after that, again, the aircraft will be used to go visit a church area up in Ohio. The other holy days are coming up at the church with likely visits. And then, of course, we get into the Feast of Tabernacles. And, of course, we don't know, but I think I'd be safe in presuming that there might be another trip to England and Jerusalem in the coming year. So really, there's a lot that goes into the use of this aircraft. And it does beg the question you might ask, why do we have it? Why is this important? Is this just a luxury that we have, or is there something more to it? Well, actually, if you look into the Bible, there's precedent for God equipping his work with the tools that they need, because he gives his apostles a huge job. I want to quote from Matthew chapter 10, just a few verses here, and tie it back to the aircraft. In verse 1, it says, "And when he had called unto him," this is Christ calling unto him his 12 disciples, "he gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out, to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease." Christ was providing direction for the work. "And he called his 12 leaders there before him." And essentially what is communicated here, it wasn't up to the apostles or the disciples at the time to figure out what they would do. This is a work that's directed by Jesus Christ. He's the head of the work. Verse 5 continues here, "These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, Go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans enter you not, but go rather to the lost house of the to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And what's interesting, if you look at it, all apostles have been given that task. Now, incidentally, here we have a really interesting reprint article on thetrumpet.com, and it's written by your regular host, Stephen Fleury. It's entitled, "Where Did Christ's Apostles Go?" I believe he's also taped a Trumpet Daily television program on that same subject. It's a really good study if you need to go back and review that. Getting back to Matthew 10 here in verse 16, Christ says, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves," and tells us to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. This is a dangerous job, and it's one which the message that we have is certainly not welcomed among those that hear it, especially among the house of Israel. You're familiar with that just by listening to the regular shows that air on KPCG, or if you watch the Key of David program. Incidentally, we taped a new one yesterday with Gerald Fleury here at the auditorium. And the title of that new program is The Abomination of Desolation. And that will follow the program that airs this weekend on the Isaiah Bula. And so you can really see that we have a strong message for this world, talking about Israel's presence in Israel going back historically. Is not an easy subject to communicate to this world. And then talking about the abomination of desolation and pointing out how everything is going to come back to Jerusalem. And there's some key players that the Bible identifies and talks about individuals. If you watch that Abomination of Desolation program, I think you'll be quite educated, you might say. It's really a fast-paced, very thorough look at that abomination of desolation. So I'd highly encourage that you make time to watch that as it comes out next week. Going back now to Matthew chapter 10, it says, "But when they persecute you in this city," Christ speaking again, talking about the fact that we're not going to be welcomed, there's not going to be a parade thrown for us. It says, "When they persecute you in this city, flee you into another. For truly I say unto you, you shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man come." And so we have instruction from the head of this church directing us to go to the different cities of the lost house of Israel all over the world, taking this warning message, expecting to be persecuted, understanding that, well, we're going to have to go from city to city, and also operating under the understanding that we're not going to finish our job before Jesus Christ returns. Now, we use this prophecy mostly in relation to the personal appearance campaigns. And I find it really interesting that God gave this direction to his apostles in the first century, but it still applies to us today. In fact, I think it's even more directly applicable to us today. The same risks are there. The same end applies. We won't have gone over all the cities, but we are going to go down fighting. There is a lot of effort expended to warn this world to also feed the flock or to take care of the church and to promote growth and education within the church. All of this in preparation for the return of Christ. And so looking back now over this past year, that job has been made much easier with the acquisition of the Gulfstream G450. And it will be really interesting, I think, to see how it's used in the coming year. And again, it's already been around the world really within just a matter of about 13 months. And honestly, really about 12 months once you take into account the time the plane was actually delivered to us. Well, we're going to take a break now. And when we return, we'll discuss a recurring curse upon one particular state. I don't think you have to guess too hard which state that is. And it's likely because, well, it is because they were hostile to the work of God. Their refusal to change has only brought about continued curses. And that's what we'll get into right after the break.
This is KPCG-FM. And this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Well, welcome back. It's no surprise that I'm going to talk about the state of California. That state in particular stands out among pretty much any other state in the country as making headlines daily for some extreme one way or the other. I want to talk specifically here about the anticipated drought that's on its way back. And really, California has been suffering through a really severe dry spell, especially Southern California. The way the weather patterns have worked out this year. And it appeared that there was going to be some relief in the last few days, and it fizzled, and now there's the potential for another storm. And even though it might bring some rain, which they need, the fires that have ravaged Southern California also bring about great risk for mudslides and other problems. It just seems like they can't win. There was a Trumpet Daily TV program taped by Stephen Fleury back in 2014, and the title was The California Curse. And it's a great program if you want to go back. Again, it's on thetrumpet.com in the archives there. And it chronicles the recent history of California. So if you go to our website and just search California drought, you'll find that program. And it goes back and talks about how it rose in popularity, the state of California did. There were so many natural blessings out there. And it had such a promising start. Just a beautiful land that's richly blessed. But as you progress through the latter decades of the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, the curses really began to impact the state. It was during that time that the state actually attacked the church, and I'll get to that in a moment. But if you go back and look at the history, as Stephen Fleury does in that Trumpet Daily TV program, you see that prior to the 1990s, they had their problems, no doubt, but they really started to escalate after the 1990s. Again, I encourage you to go to our website. I'm going to quote a few articles here from the website. But if you search California or California Curse on the website, there's over 900 articles, books, booklets, radio programs, TV programs that discuss what's going on in California. Gives you a pretty good indication of the way California fits into prophecy and really speaks volumes about the direction of this country. The first quote I have here is from Gerald Fleury from an October 2006 print edition of the Trumpet magazine. He says, over 60% of the United States is suffering from abnormally dry or drought conditions. At this point, California appears to be suffering most of all. Again, this is about 12 years ago now, 11 and a half, 12 years. He says the state often leads the way in U.S. disasters. Is there a reason? There is a mind-staggering hope embedded in California's catastrophes. Nothing is more important for you to understand. And so there is a message of hope, even though the nation and the state in particular suffers through these tragedies. Down in the article, he says California has had a six-year drought at the end of the 1980s. Now it has suffered through another multi-year drought. The state also has a $38 billion deficit. Now, yesterday I went to research that to see where they stand today, and I was kind of shocked. And again, I haven't studied this well enough, so hopefully this isn't too misleading. But the reports that I read show that California has erased that deficit and now has just a mild surplus. But I find that pretty interesting. It's interesting in light of the fact that there's almost 4 million people in California on food stamps, and the average citizen, the debt for the state, again, there is a total debt in the state. They're just running a small surplus year to year right now. But the average debt is over $10,800 per citizen. California is a type of the larger nation. Joe Flory wrote a decade earlier in December 1993, I wrote this in a Trumpet article, and he's quoting himself here. He says, one disaster after another is striking California. These deadly disasters are repeatedly labeled as the worst ever. With all the disasters that have struck California the past few years, it's as if the state is under a curse. And isn't that true? Isn't that obvious for anyone to see? You don't hear headlines made from Ohio or Nebraska or even New York or Florida like you do from California. Just, you know, not enough rain or too much rain or fires or whatever it might be. A lot of trouble out that way. The article says a six-year drought ended in 1991. It was the worst ever in California. He wraps up his article by saying California is the only state that ever attacked Mr. Armstrong and his work. Actually, it attacked a lot more than that. California really attacked the living God. Could such an unjustified attack by the state have anything to do with California's problems in the last several years, he asks. Great question. I think we all know the answer to that. And again, there's hope in this message because God is trying to turn us back to him. But California is going to suffer through curse after curse. I found Stephen Flory's Trumpet Daily TV program and Gerald Flory's article. They're pretty interesting as you just look back over the decades. We're used to, or we're very familiar with today, hearing about the worst ever natural disaster, the worst hurricane season, the biggest earthquakes, the most severe drought. And really, if you look back over the last few decades, that's been the story, but it's just getting worse and worse and worse. Now, I have a few articles that I just want to briefly quote from here to suggest that there might be a renewed drought period in the most populated state in America. That's the way it's looking right now. And first, I want to have just a little sidebar here. It's increasingly difficult to find science and scientific studies that you can have confidence in, that you can trust them. There's just been too many stories in the news recently about how scientists and even government agencies are changing the actual observed data to support their theories. It's just absolutely atrocious what they're doing. What's the point? What's the point of measuring the environment if you're simply going to adjust it to fit your narrative? Let me just give you a few headlines from just the last year or two that make this point. This is from a report released by the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. They said former NOAA, or National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, it's a government agency, a former NOAA scientist confirms colleagues manipulated climate records. So there's a whistleblower within a government agency that's calling out the scientists for manipulating climate records. From the Telegraph in 2015, the fiddling with temperature data is the biggest science scandal ever. From Scientific America, 2018, climate researchers' work is turned into fake news. Now, in that article, they were trying to defend the scientist who altered his findings and was caught doing so. But then they said, well, the media blew it out of proportion. It's tragic that politics and personal agenda factor into science. And that's what makes it so difficult to truly report on what's going on. And as we've talked about before, it's not a matter of climate change. What are they really lying about? Well, they're trying to diminish or minimize the major tragedies and the major curses that are upon this world and on the nations of Israel in particular. Just from a few days ago, another headline, Noah caught lying about Arctic sea ice. And so you just go from story to story and you try to find some reliable data. And honestly, it's just very hard to not call everything into question. I have a story here from 2016. This is from the Bay Area News Group. The title of the article is California Drought. Past dry periods have lasted more than 200 years, scientists say. And they came to that conclusion by studying tree rings and extrapolating their data from that to understand that sometimes these droughts can last a long time. But I thought this is pretty interesting at the start here. He said California in 2013 received less rain than any year since it became a state in 1850. And at least one Bay Area scientist says that based on tree ring data, the current rainfall season is on pace to be the driest since 1580, more than 150 years before George Washington was born. The question is, how much longer will it last? Harkening back to what I said before, Stephen Fleury talked about the 70s and 80s. Gerald Fleury talks about the 90s, right? We look at just 5 years ago, 2013, terrible drought. 2 years ago, even worse than that, worse than it's almost, you know, 450 years worth of curses. But the problem is it's getting worse and worse. This article says a mega drought today would have catastrophic effects. California, the nation's most populous state with 38 million residents, has built a massive economy, Silicon Valley, Hollywood, and millions of acres of farmland, all in a semi-arid area. The state's dams, canals, and reservoirs have never been tested by the kind of prolonged drought that experts say will almost certainly occur again. Now, we don't have the perspective of looking back over the last 100 years, but could we be in the midst of one of those mega droughts that is just worsening? And they project, well, maybe 20 years we'll feel the impact of that. I put before you that maybe we're going to start to feel it right away. Another article here, this one is from the Los Angeles Times, February 23rd, 2018. The article says, alarming dry conditions in California are setting new records. The article begins, California is headed to a dry finish to February, historically one of the state's wettest months. So here we are looking forward to perhaps replenishing water supplies and setting out for a positive spring, and it's one of the driest ever. This article, this is quoting a climatologist, Bill Patzert. He says, whether it's warm or cold, the rain story is the same. And here in Southern California, there's been scattered showers, but downtown L.A. hasn't seen more than a trace. In fact, this month could be one for the record books as far as the driest Februarys, or one of the driest on the record. Sacramento has received no rain at all this month. Its record for driest February was in 1899 when the state's capital recorded 0.04 of an inch. Now, I don't know if in the last day or two it's rained in Sacramento, but again, another worst ever, driest ever, and this is one of the wettest months, and there's no rain. It said, down further, the article says, the last time Los Angeles had no rain in February was 1933. Listen to this. It's not just the rainfall in the big cities. Really, what's more important is the snowfall that is captured in the mountains. It's like a water reservoir there that they use throughout the year. The article, this is the Los Angeles Times from just a day or two ago, says the conditions in the Sierra Nevada, California's greatest mountain range, have been dismal. It says the water content of Lake Tahoe Basin snowpack is just 20% of average for this time of year. At one station at Fallen Leaf, at elevation 6,242 feet, the land is dry, and the snowpack is at 0% of normal. That is a catastrophe waiting to happen. Again, you just the article carries on about the lack of rainfall in Los Angeles. Another article here, I'll go through these quickly. This is from the Washington Post. The headline is, the latest California winter now third driest on record. This is February 20th, 2018. So third driest on record. It says U.S. Drought Monitor last week declared that half of the state of California and all of Southern California is now back in drought. Another article here. This is from 2018, February 23rd. State drought restrictions could be permanent. The article says members of the State Water Resource Council delayed a decision on Tuesday about whether to bring back what had been temporary water bans from California's drought spanning from 2013 to 2017. It comes after U.S. officials declared that nearly half the state, all of it in the South, is back in drought just months after emerging from it. And so while there was great hope after last year's wet season that did replenish the reservoirs to a certain extent, they are dry again. At least the current snowpack and rainfall. They do have water in the reservoirs. But how long does that last? How long does that last? So I have another article here that I won't get into. This is from the United States Department of Agriculture, and it just, again, reinforces how severe this drought is. And they speak on the reservoir storage. I guess I'll just read their conclusion here for the state of California. Warm, dry conditions across California in January continue to keep snowpack levels low. The statewide average snow water content on February 5th was 25% of normal for the date. Even as most of California's reservoirs are still brimming from last year's storms, almost half of the state is experiencing abnormally dry to moderate drought conditions. The South Coast from Santa Barbara to San Bernardino counties remain gripped in severe drought. So the story is the same there, just really terrible outlook for the water year that lies ahead. And what if we have a really hot, dry summer? And what if we have other problems? You can see where California is going to remain in the news. The whole Southwest United States is under drought right now. 77 million people live in an area that's in some type of drought. That's about a quarter of the U.S. population. But as you and I both know, we're not just talking about drinking water. We're not just talking about water that's used in manufacturing. But we're also, and I think most importantly, feeling that drought through agricultural products raised in the Southwest. Fruit, vegetables, and even milk produced in California outstrip much of the United States. This is an article from July 2017 from the Orange County Register. Just some interesting statistics here. They say California's 77,500 farms produce more than 400 commodities and two-thirds of the nation's fruits and nuts. About one-quarter of what California produces is exported around the world. Nearly 27% of California's 77,000-plus farms generated sales over $100,000. So 27% of those farms are six-figure farms as far as financial output. That's greater than the national average by 20%. They say if you look county by county, California's gross value for agricultural production declined 8.6% from 2014 to 2015, mostly in part to the drought. And it said that said the yearly production of 2015 was still $59 billion. You see, that industry is declining, and it is by far the biggest in the country. This article says California's cash receipts in 2015 were first in the nation and $20 billion more than the second highest ranked state. So you can see where these problems are leading. It's not only a lack of drinking water. It's not a matter of dry grass or shortfalls in manufacturing. The agricultural impact is going to be substantial. It's a dry year. 75% of the fruits and nuts for the United States consumption comes out of California. Now, you can't really study this example of the state of California without thinking of the blessings and cursings chapter in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Just for lack of time here, I'll just grab a few highlights. Leviticus 26, in the first five verses, God tells us not to make idols or graven images, not to bow down. God says, I'm your God. God says, you need to keep my Sabbaths. You need to reverence my sanctuary. I'm the eternal, he says. California attacked the eternal. California attacked his sanctuary, you might even say. God carries on. He says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall reach unto vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. I mean, that's what God offers if we would just walk in his law, if we just do things his way. Now, we are very familiar with the blessings in Britain, in the British Empire, the former British Empire, in America, and the riches, all that flowed from these nations around the world based on the obedience of one man, Abraham. You can read our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, to get the full story there. But the lesson taught was that obedience brought these unthinkable blessings. But they are conditional upon our continued obedience. It depends on how we live. God is fair, right? He sets forward the rules. He elaborates on the consequences when we don't follow those rules. I'll quote now from Deuteronomy 28, verses 15 through 20. I'll just pick up a few sentences here. It says, but it shall come to pass, if you will not listen unto the voice of the Eternal your God to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you this day, that all of these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. He said, cursed will you be in the city, in the field, your basket, your store. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body, the fruit of the land, the increase of your cattle. And he goes on with all of these curses. It says, the Eternal shall send upon you cursing, vexation, and rebuke in all that you set your hand to do until you be destroyed and until you perish quickly because of the wickedness of your doing whereby you have forsaken me. God is not unfair. He's not unjust. He's not picking on California. God is saying, look at the fruits of your lifestyle. How can I bless you? How can you expect to prosper and reap the benefits if you live such a terrible life? Fox News this morning, there on their website, has a story. California has the worst quality of life in the United States, according to the survey by the U.S. News and World Report. The worst quality of life. And yet it's one of the most blessed naturally. It's beautiful. And even in the midst of drought, it still outstrips the agricultural production of the rest of the country. It still is bountiful in that way. So how could the quality of life be so bad in California? Well, this study takes into factors in social engagement, right? It's not just the resources there, but what is the life of individuals like there? Well, they're 43rd as far as fiscal stability. They're 46th in opportunity, 38th in infrastructure. I mean, just ranking the states and what you have to live through, the roads, the opportunities for jobs and building family, carrying on fiscally in a stable situation. When you start to think of that and social interaction, they measure crime, they measure health care. California is at the bottom. Iowa scored highly in infrastructure and healthcare. They have the best ranking as far as where to live. Iowa, the middle of the country. California is under a curse. There's lessons that need to be learned here. There are consequences for rebelling against God. You can't attack God. You can't attack God's family, his campus, his way of life, and escape the consequences. Now, California, as Gerald Flory pointed out, is unique in their attack against God. And California, again, is a type of the United States. California leads in many of the nation's pathologies or problems that separate us from God, whether it be crime or drugs or just the social lifestyle, the liberal impact of policies out there. Perhaps one thing that comes to mind quickly for all of us is pornography and the state of California. In 2012, it was said that the United States produced 90% of the global supply of pornography. 90% of this this drug that really destroys individuals and families and nations. 90% of it comes from the United States. Now, I would presume California is among one of the top producing states, if not the top, in 2016. This is from the Tech Insider. The article title is How Los Angeles' Porn Valley Became the Adult Entertainment Capital of the World. And I won't go through all the details here, but basically because the, Silicon Valley, is basically caught right there by Hollywood, provided opportunity for actors and actresses and producers and cameramen that couldn't find work in the movie and TV industry while they got into pornography. And it really started to build in the 1970s. Let me see down here just a little bit further. It says, meanwhile, the days of picking out porn from curtain back section of your local video rental store and paying for it started to disappear. This is in the 90s. The growing popularity of the internet made it easier than ever for people to access adult content, and the industry exploded, right? And it just talks about the impact in Southern California from this growing pornography industry. God says in Ezekiel 33 that he doesn't take pleasure in the death of the wicked. He doesn't take pleasure in the curses, but there is a law in place. And if we live contrary to that law, the consequences are prophesied. They're predictable, and we see them today fulfilled in the news. God wants to see us turn all of this around. God wants us to prosper and to be in good health, and California should really be the focal point for that in this country. God wants to see that prosperity, but it's not going to happen until this nation and that state and individuals repent and turn back to God. Well, we'll take one more short break here, and when we return, I want to just introduce a project that I've come across that I think is really phenomenal in some ways and yet tragic in so many others. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Well, if you're still with me, congratulations. We have just one final segment here, and as usual, I didn't leave myself enough time for it. But really, I think this is something that we'll be speaking on in the coming years, coming months perhaps. I might even try to do a little bit of the research here myself. But we have, I think, some other very talented contributors to the Trumpet, to the radio programs on KPCG that probably would do a much better job with this. I was going to start out in Romans chapter 1. We go there frequently, and there God expresses his wrath toward those individuals that are ungodly, that suppress the truth in unrighteousness. God is wrathful toward scientists in this particular example that I'll talk about here today when he exposes the majesty of his creation and they suppress it. You can understand how that would infuriate our Creator. It's a wonderful, beautiful creation. And God has given us the capacity to see and understand, and it should really cause us to magnify our God. It should really cause us to live our lives in a very positive, productive way. And as I noted earlier, scientists are coming out now manipulating data, manipulating their findings to support their evolutionary or atheistic, perhaps, agenda. In verse 20 of Romans chapter 1, it says, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." Now, there's a lot of ways you can use this particular verse and examine how mankind, and again, scientists in particular here, are just really frustrating God, to put it mildly. He says, the invisible things that I've created are clearly seen, and they can be understood. God does that so that we're without excuse. I've often thought that the better our observation, the more powerful our telescopes or the more powerful our scientific tools become, the more obvious it is that there is a creator. The observations that we make just prove beyond a reasonable doubt, prove absolutely that there is a mastermind creator who's responsible for this detailed, infinite structured existence of life. We have a great booklet, Does God Exist? It's a short booklet. Again, I encourage you to read that. But there's a project that's starting to make some headlines. I just came across this about a month or so ago. It's really a complicated scientific endeavor, and it's a global effort to study and publish their findings. They estimate it's going to take years, if not decades, of research, collaboration, international effort to come to a conclusion here to this study. The project that I'm talking about is called the Human Cell Atlas. Their mission statement is, and I quote, "to create a comprehensive reference map of all human cells, the fundamental units of life, as a basis for both understanding human health and diagnosing and monitoring and treating disease." It sounds so good at the start, and then it turns the wrong direction. I just studied very quickly. I honestly didn't like biology all that much when I was going through school, but I have to say yesterday I kind of sat there in awe as I was looking at some of the facts that we've discovered. It's estimated that there are 37.5 trillion cells on an average or in an average human body. That was a finding back in 2013 by a consortium of European Union scientists. There are 200 different types of cells that they've identified thus far. Within each cell, there's 20 or more organelles, they call them. Cells perform hundreds, if not thousands, of different functions. There's a wonderful psalm, Psalm 139, that records King David's musing on the greatness of God. And David starts out by talking about how God knows every detail about us, our thoughts, our actions. David says, "Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence?" God knows everything. And God has equipped us with a godlike mind that is empowered to use really sophisticated tools that are part of the human body, our hands, our vision, our hearing, our sense of smell. But again, it's this mind power that God gives us, the intellect that we have to observe and to start to connect some of our observations. In Psalm 139, verse 13 through 15, it says, "For you did form my inward parts. You did knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for you are fearful and wonderful. Wonderful are your works. You know me right well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret." That's from the Revised Standard Version. David understood, we all understand, that we're made in our mother's womb. And how does that happen? Well, you look at cells and cell function. And again, I don't have a lot of time here. But God is, I think, in a right way, very proud of his creation. And he tells us, look at my creation. Psalm 8, verse 3 says, "When I consider the heavens and the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have made, what is man that you are mindful of him? right? You can look at the heavens. You can study with a microscope the cellular level. And it's just absolutely beyond words how sophisticated it is, how inexplainable or unexplainable it is if there wasn't a creator. But there is. And God says, look, I want you to observe that and then think about where you fit in. Psalm 19 says, the heavens declare God's glory. That's what God wants us to see, his glory. He doesn't want us to suppress it. Now, the latest print edition of the Trumpet magazine has just a brief article in there about evolution and define evolution. There's another article on the next page about your mysterious, awesome universe. God and his work promotes the beauty of God's creation and draws attention to that. The Human Cell Atlas, on the contrary, says this. This is from their white paper describing the project. It says, the Human Cell Atlas is a collection of maps that will describe and define cellular basis for health and disease. Now, the ultimate aim here is to manufacture more sophisticated, more effective drugs, to perhaps manufacture tissue, to alter genes, and to get into the cellular level, to treat disease, to try to extend life. God says, you don't have to go through and fiddle with my creation. You have to obey my laws. Then you'll prosper. But God does equip us with incredible minds. This article or this white paper says, talking about the fact that they knew there were a lot of different kinds of cells, but it wasn't until really very late in our history that we had the computer technology and observation technology that makes it possible to even create this atlas. They said it has been a key challenge in biology for more than 150 years. New tools such as single-cell genomics have put it within reach. It is an ambitious but achievable goal and requires an international community of biologists, clinicians, technologists, physicists, computational scientists, software engineers, mathematicians. I mean, they go on and on about what's going to be required to really make this work. The human body is amazing. 37 trillion cells. Many of those cells are regenerated or replaced anywhere from days to years. I saw a video yesterday that said the average red blood cell lasts about 6 months. And during that 6 months of life, it travels about 1,000 miles in our body. Scientists have been very familiar with the cell cycle. That's something you can Google and look into there. It talks about just how a cell divides and replicates itself. It's the most amazing thing. The DNA duplicates itself. They're then checked. The duplicated DNA is checked to make sure it's exactly the same. It repairs damages, and then it starts to split apart, and these spindle fibers reach in from the sides of the cell and pull apart the DNA, and then the cell divides. You could go through all the different phases here. I'm not going to have time to do it. It is the most amazing, miraculous event, and God intends for us to observe that and to tie it back to who and what we are. I'll just encourage you to dig out from your library or visit our website. There is a tremendous book written by Herbert Armstrong called The Missing Dimension in Sex. And on page 101 of that book, it's a subhead about the body is like the church. Herbert Armstrong says the Eternal, in his instruction book for mankind, compares the marvelous human body to God's church, which is the body of Christ. The various members in God's church have various functions, and God provides them with various spiritual gifts for performing these functions. This is found in the chapter devoted to the spiritual gifts of 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Well, I'm going to leave you with that to go study the missing dimension in sex, to study Romans chapter 1. It says that even though that scientists knew God, they didn't honor him or give him thanks. They just promoted themselves. How foolish mankind is. How awful we are under satanic influence. Vanity, intellectual vanity, all of it, suppressing God's truth. Try to make time to review the Bible and stand in awe of the observations, the unbiased observations, mind you, that mankind is able to look at this creation and prove that we have a great God. Well, I hope you have a great day. I hope the students and faculty in Edstone are able to brave the blizzard. And we'll hear from Stephen Fleury early next week. So until then, have a great day.